Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're tackling quite a moment in history. Session 9 of the Council of Chalcedon. That's 451 AD.
Right, a pivotal church council.
Exactly. And we've got this source, basically a forensic analysis of old church documents. It shines a light on some, let's say, interesting procedures and maybe some political games back then.
Our focus today is understanding why this one session, the one dealing with Bishop Ibas of Edessa, is so key.
Okay.
It really helps explain the deeper reasons why the Oriental Orthodox churches eventually said no to the whole Council of Chalcedon. You'll see how theology and, well, politics got tangled up.
Okay, let's dive into Bishop Ibas. He'd been condemned before, right? At Ephesus II, sometimes called the Robber Council.
That's the one. Condemned for seeming a bit too close to Nestorius and critical of Cyril of Alexandria's views on Christ.
Nestorius and Cyril, big theological opponents back then on how to understand Christ's divine and human natures. And Ibas wrote this specific letter, didn't he? The letter to Mar the Persian.
Yes, and that was a major issue. It praised Theodore of Mopsuestia, someone later condemned for, well, Nestorian leanings, so very problematic.
So you'd expect him to show some pretty clear repentance at Chalcedon, right?
You would, but that's what's interesting. He didn't, really. When they asked him about calling Cyril a heretic, his answers were quite evasive.
Like what?
Things like he had no memory of so doing, or that he just followed his superior bishop until Cyril kind of clarified things. It wasn't a clear retraction.
Hardly a ringing endorsement of Cyril or a clear break from his past views. So why the big push to bring him back into the fold?
Well, the Roman legates, Pope Leo's representatives, basically declared Ibas innocent and Orthodox almost right away.
Just like that, after only a partial reading of the previous council's minutes.
Exactly. It feels very much like a prejudgment. Their agenda seems pretty clear. Overturn Ephesus II. And the chairman, Anatolius, a top official, he was known to be against Dioscorus, Ibas's opponent, and supportive of Ibas.
So the fix was kind of in from the start.
It certainly looks that way. The process seems guided towards rehabilitation.
And here's where it gets really odd procedurally.
Mm-hmm.
Ibas actually tried to present documents, evidence of his orthodoxy, but the council refused.
They did. They just demanded anathematize Nestorius now, you know, condemn him formally.
So forget the evidence. Just say the magic words. Why not look at his documents if they genuinely wanted to clear his name?
It raises serious questions. And think about the contrast. Earlier in Chalcedon, they condemned Dioscorus.
Right.
A major reason given was his failure to appear after being summoned 3 times. They really emphasized his contempt for the council.
Okay.
Yet Ibas, who himself said he was condemned at Ephesus II in my absence, gets this, well, arguably biased hearing for his rehabilitation. It really looks like a double standard based on who is politically aligned with whom.
And this wasn't just about Ibas or Dioscorus, was it? This fed into annulling the entire previous council, Ephesus II.
Precisely. Calling Ephesus II invalid was a huge step, a significant procedural anomaly, as our source puts it.
Invalidating a whole ecumenical council retroactively.
Yes. They called it lawless, but it functioned as a kind of blanket annulment. It cleared the way to reinstate people like Ibas, who were on the right side politically, without needing to meticulously re-examine every single case decided there.
Okay, but what about that letter, the letter to Mari? You said it was problematic, potentially Nestorian. Was it discussed?
That's the kicker. It was read aloud in the session.
Yeah.
Its controversial content was out there.
Yeah.
Nothing. No recorded discussion. No condemnation of its theology by the council fathers.
Seriously. They just ignored it.
Worse, one of the Pope's legates, Pasticinus, actually misrepresented it, claiming it somehow proved Ibas was orthodox. It seems like a deliberate oversight, frankly.
Just sweep the theological problem under the rug to get the political result.
It allowed his rehabilitation without any real theological reckoning with his past statements.
So pulling this all together for Chalcedon, it looks like a clear case of theology taking a backseat to politics, doesn't it? Decisions seem driven by the need to reverse Ephesus II. Not necessarily by careful theology or consistent church law.
And that's precisely how the Oriental Orthodox churches saw it, connecting the dots. For them, rehabilitating Ibas despite his dodgy past, annulling Ephesus II for political reasons, these double standards, it all confirmed their fears.
So they saw Chalcedon as...
as this basically a politically rigged council. One that, in their view, betrayed the true faith, condemned its defenders like Dioscorus unfairly, while bringing back figures like Ibas, who they saw as theological opponents.
It really makes you think, yeah, how often are these defining moments, even deeply spiritual ones, shaped not just by faith or doctrine, but by, well, very human power plays and maneuvering, something to definitely mull over.